You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors, and thanks so much for joining me each and every Saturday and telling your friends. Today's topic is about current events. It's about the coronavirus, and the long-awaited vaccine has finally arrived. What is a vaccine, you may ask? How could it keep me from fighting coronavirus? How does it work? Well, in essence, a vaccine fools your body into thinking it's really seeing the virus and gooses up your immune system. It prepares you if you encounter the virus that your body is ready for it by making antibodies. It's the preparation. And your immune system is then ready. Well, you know I love the world of sports, the world of art, the world of surgery. Where do I see the idea of preparation for the virus, for the game, for the defense, in sports? Well, I see it in Phil Jackson's 11 rings, 6 with the Chicago Bulls and 5 with the Los Angeles Lakers. But 9 of those rings came about because the man sitting next to him on the bench taught him how to coach, taught him how to prepare, and taught him how to fight the virus, how to fight the defense with a novel idea. An artist who came to basketball, who combined the science and the art of basketball and taught Phil Jackson how to prepare, how to make a vaccine in basketball, essentially. And his name was Tex Winter. Tex Winter never got the credit he should have gotten. Certainly while he was coaching. Later in his career, they finally let him, an assistant coach, into the Hall of Fame, reluctantly, because the powers that be were jealous of him and didn't think an assistant coach was worthy enough to be in the Hall of Fame all those years. But Phil Jackson kept pushing it. Don't give me the credit. Talk to Tex Winter. He taught me how to be a coach. This story is awesome. And in medicine, we'll get into my hero growing up, the man who created a vaccine that eradicated polio, who was very similar to Tex Winter, soft-spoken, selfless, but a love of his field, changed the world forever, the great Dr. Jonas Salk. But let's listen to the Jonas Salk of basketball when Phil Jackson here is talking about his mentor, Tex Winter, number one.
What have you learned from him more than anything else?
How to develop an offense from skill drills is probably the best thing that Tex taught. Basketball starts with being able to learn how to pick up the basketball and pivot. And from there you move into passing and then the other things that become more complicated. But you have to start from very basic beginning with basketball.
Now listen to Phil Jackson tell you how Tex Winter was shunned because of jealousy. The powers that be did not want him in the Hall of Fame. Number two.
The idea that an assistant coach would be in a Hall of Fame kind of grated at some people. That it was made up for head coaches or general managers or people that had played the game itself in a great nature. But Tex was the winningest basketball coach in college when he went into the pros with the Houston Rockets.
Number three.
And he had been a head coach in so many different realms and so many different arenas, not only in the Big Ten, but, you know, the Big Eight, and then also out here with Long Beach before he retired as an active college coach. That to be hired on as a coach to the coaches was what Jerry Krause wanted to do for him. Seemed kind of like an unusual position. And he was shuttled and shunted around in the Bulls organization a little bit during different realms of coaches between Stan Auerbach and Doug Collins.
Listen to this, how Phil Jackson says Tex Winter taught him how to coach. He didn't know how to coach. He was a coach's coach because he developed the vaccine. He developed the idea of prepping the team and created this system offense called the triangle offense. Number four.
We had a relationship that went very deep, Tex and I, simply because I wasn't a very good coach and didn't have a lot of knowledge, and he had a lot of knowledge. He and Johnny Bach, both his contemporary, who are my assistants, co-assistants when I was on that Bulls staff, kind of educated me about the different formats of basketball. And then Tex spent two summers with me teaching me how to develop all the drills that I've used all these years as skill drills to develop the system that he's taught.
And just listen to the love that Tex Winter had for the game of basketball. He would travel anywhere to teach the game for free, just like Jonas Salk. He didn't patent the vaccine for polio. He felt it was humanity's vaccine. There was no place to make a profit on eradicating polio with his vaccine. Tex Winter the same way. Number five.
In that system, Tex was, in that aspect, Tex was willing to go anywhere in the world to teach the offense or teach basketball. And his giving to the game itself, I think, is something that's a great benefit to a lot of people. I mean, people in the Philippines and New Zealand and Iceland and, you know, around the world remember, you know, his tour and his time that he'll spend freely and givingly without really remuneration to just promote the game of basketball and particularly his style of it.
And as I said, his triangle offense is like a vaccine in sports, preparing you for the defense. Number seven.
In the process of coaching the Bulls at that particular time, Doug was completely often befuddled by the fact that we had no real great point guard to contest with Isaiah Thomas. Not too many people did. But Tex kept encouraging him that a system offense would be able to play without having one specific ball carrier, floor leader on the floor, and tried to, you know, convince Doug into running the system.
Number eight.
Having inherited that team and knowing that, you know, we had a guard named John Paxson, who was just really a terrific player, a good leader, but not particularly a point guard. It was very easy to adopt that system of offense and, you know, use it in a variety of ways in which we still continue to do. In which a guy like, you know, Derek Fisher shares the point guard responsibilities with so many different people, with Brian, with Odom, and so forth, you know. So it's a shared opportunity, which is kind of a lost art in our game.
And he did not suffer fools. He spoke his mind, his passion for the game. Jonas Salk the same way. Get out of his way. It made people mad at him, made people jealous of him. But it didn't matter because he loved the game. Jonas Salk loved humankind and wanted to create this vaccine just to help people. If he came off as being abrupt, fine. As long as he was doing it for the right reason. Same thing for Tex Winter. Number nine.
Yeah, we used to say there wasn't much of a governor on Tex. He just spoke what his mind, you know, impulsively told him to say. And you know, he was like the, you know, the mind of the basketball gods. If you played against the rules of the game, he was going to, you know, comment to you or comment to me in hopes that I would comment to the players later on. So, you know, he got frustrated with players at times. You know, Michael Jordan, who he said couldn't pass the ball right, and, you know, Shaq, who wouldn't take coaching very easily, and Kobe, who over-penetrated or handled the ball too long so the offense didn't run right. So every star that I've ever had on a team, except Scottie Pippen, basically, he had trouble with parts of their game.
I want you to hear Tex speak himself. Here he is, number 10, soundbite number 10, talking about his mentor who brought science and art to help create the vaccine, which ultimately became the triangle offense. Number 10.
You'd have to say that, in my mind at least, that Phog Allen was really sort of the father of basketball coaches. He's the guy initially who really kind of tried to make a science out of it and develop plays and talked about strategies and talked about winning and losing. Then Phog, in his very last game, was played in Phog Allen Fieldhouse against my K-State team, and we beat them for the conference championship. And that was his last game. I always, in some ways, felt a little bad badly about that.
Number 12.
We used it all my years of coaching at K-State. And I wrote the book in 60-61. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've got the high post series in there. It's a high post man comes up, and it's the basic cut, and then we form a triangle out of that. Just
right.
Another way to get into the triangle. He didn't go to the triangle so much. He spaced the floor and used Sidney Wicks, for example, on the low post weak side.
He's talking about John Wooden and UCLA. Finally, I want you to hear why this came about, how he came up with the idea, his vaccine for sports. Number 13.
Hank Iba at Oklahoma State, you couldn't drive the lane on them. They collapsed to the extent that, and if you tried to penetrate from the wing with the basketball, you're going to run over a lot of people, a lot of players. They just wouldn't let you penetrate on that. So what I did out of the triangle, I developed the concept because they're dropping off the wing and giving you an opportunity to start your penetration, and then they close in from the weak side. It's fanning the top of the circle guard away, like you're seeing today all the time, fanning them away, and then when they help, actually they're vulnerable to the pitch and the shot. And we had to develop that particular series of options in order to combat the way Hank Iba played his defense. And that's kind of how a lot of things in the triangle offense evolved, is reacting to defenses.
It's just how your body reacts to the virus. It's making a vaccine, preparing you so that you can fight the virus when it ultimately presents itself, unlocking the defense. The similarities to me are right there in front of you. Jonas Salk, just like Tex Winter, selfless. He did it for the love of basketball. Jonas Salk did it for the love of humanity. Here in 1955, when the polio vaccine that he develops takes over the world and is now going to cure human beings and prevent them from getting polio, he's being interviewed. Listen to how selfless he is when he's asked, aren't you going to have a patent? Aren't you going to make lots of money on this? Jonas Salk looks like, what are you, crazy? I'm doing this to help people. I don't care about the money. This is Edward R. Murrow interviewing Jonas Salk, number one.
Who owns the patent on this vaccine?
Well, the people, I would say. There is no patent. This is, could you patent the sun?
Jonas Salk, my hero, and relevant now because we're going to be talking to a COVID-19 vaccine expert. But there's precedent to the selfless doctor creating something for humanity. But the jealousy that comes with it is something I did not realize. Let's listen to number 7.
When Jonas Salk developed the polio vaccine,
the Salk vaccine against crippling polio proved to be a sensational success.
He famously opposed the idea of patenting and profiting off the discovery.
They weren't in this for making money, just didn't interest him.
Today, patents and profits have become central to the development of innovative drugs.
Without patents, companies wouldn't have the incentive to bring a medicine to market.
Number 8.
When the polio vaccine was rolled out in 1955, Dr. Jonas Salk, the scientist who developed the drug with funding from the March of Dimes, became an overnight celebrity.
And the entire world heralded the discovery which assured an end to one of mankind's most dread diseases.
Listen to his son talk about looking at that interview where he's asked who's going to get the profits for this. Do you have a patent on it? How proud his son is of his dad. He says, look at his face. He can't believe he's being asked that question. Number nine.
Following that, Ed Murrow, who had a television program, interviewed my father. And one of the questions he asked was,
who owns the patent on this vaccine?
Well, the people, I would say, there is no patent.
If you look at the original tape of that interview, there's a moment where there's sort of a little bit of pausing. And he thought for a moment, and then you could see the expression on his face just light up. He said,
could you patent the sun?
He just saw this as this was just a natural evolution of science. The results belonged to the people.
He was an artist who came to medicine. That's where the free thinking comes, to be able to create this whole idea of a vaccine not using the live virus. He went against the grain, but he did it. Number two.
Jonas was a big thinker and wanted a place where big thinking could be done. He was a dreamer, and he knew that you have to dream to create something new.
Money was not his goal. Getting rid of polio was with his vaccine. His greatest moment. Listen to one of his colleagues talk about him meeting a young boy and being introduced as Dr. Jonas Salk. He created the polio vaccine. And the little boy says, what's polio? This, more than any amount of money, is what drove Jonas Salk. It what drove Tex Winter. The selflessness of these folks is what makes them the true heroes. Number three.
There was a relatively young boy with him. I would say he was 12 or 13, I suspect. This is Dr. Jonas Salk. He cured polio. And the little boy looked at him and said, what is polio? And Jonas was beaming because he felt he has finally achieved it, because this kid doesn't even know the disease polio.
Number four.
I think Jonas realized that his discovery wasn't only important in terms of public health, but that it was important to remove a sense of fear from people. And that might have been the biggest effect.
He was perfectly conscious of the significance of this vaccine. And indeed, Jonas never obtained return monies from the sale of the vaccine.
Number five.
One has to admire his single-mindedness in developing a polio vaccine against a lot of people who would doubt us and said it couldn't be done this way. Once he'd done that, I think he felt, you know, he needed to do something else with his life, help humanity in a different way.
He was free-thinking. He was an exceptionally creative man. And he had this notion of a distinction between people who were evolvers and people who were maintainers of the status quo. And he really wanted to populate the Institute with creative people who were evolvers.
But what comes with that fame is jealousy. Tex Winter barely getting into the Hall of Fame after he has a stroke and really can't even appreciate the accomplishment. But that didn't matter. He got 9 rings with Phil Jackson and got his just due for creating the vaccine in sports, if you will. Jonas Salk, it didn't matter. He cured us from the ravages of polio. Who knew about the jealousy in the science world when you do such a great thing? Let's listen to number 10.
On April 12, 1955, when Jonas Salk's vaccine was shown to be effective in a large trial, he did become this international hero. And I would say that the prevention of polio probably is one of the most important achievements in medical history. The interesting thing is that this wasn't done by a pharmaceutical firm or research institute, but by a single man.
Number 11.
Just with his research associates. So that was quite incredible. So it surprised me that while heads of states around the country, around the world actually, rushed to honor him, that the scientific community remained ominously quiet, and that their rebuke really cast a shadow over his achievements. Basil O'Connor, as I said, the powerful director of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, said that the scientists acted as if Salk had halitosis or had committed a felony.
Number 12.
It started out that Salk, of course, was quite junior and wasn't a member of the scientific brotherhood. He had made this vaccine and tested it really in secret, almost behind their back, at the same time challenging what was a closely held principle at that time that only a vaccine made with a live virus could prevent a disease for a lifetime, as smallpox had. And Jonas Salk made his from a killed vaccine.
They were so jealous of him. Number 13.
Jonas Salk reached out to the public, as few scientists, maybe with the exception of Pasteur, ever had. And in that, he had kind of crossed that imaginary line of proper academic behavior and was accused of kind of pandering to the press, soliciting media attention. Although nominated many times, he never received the Nobel Prize.
And finally, number 14, he didn't suffer fools, but that didn't matter. He got the job done. He accomplished his goal. Number 14.
One of his friends said, well, look, when he made that vaccine and all the success that followed, he probably received more celebrity than most physician scientists in the history of medicine. So don't discount envy. Envy is fierce in the world of science. But Salk did contribute to it a little bit himself. He had a very unconventional approach to science, talked about intuition and used a lot of metaphors.
The great Dr. Jonas Salk, my hero, and now you know why. The great Tex Winter, a hero in basketball. Phil Jackson's hero in basketball, teaching you the importance of how to play the game before the game even starts, which is what a vaccine is, to fight the virus before you even get it. And if you do get it, you can fight it. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to an expert in COVID-19. And what exactly is this vaccine all about? The great Dr. Michael Benedered from Cedars-Sinai, joining me next here on the Weekend Warrior Show on 710 ESPN.
Miss an interview or Doc's weekly story? Check it out on the Weekend Warrior Facebook page. Also, Doc's advice to callers on their aches and pains. Just type Weekend Warrior in the Facebook search bar and you'll see Doc's picture in the listings. And thanks for checking out the Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
That's right. Mahalo. Aloha.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Ahui hoi.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, if you've got the poison, I've got the remedy. The remedy is the experience. This is
listening to Jason Mraz, all about the medicine for the disease. I'm joined now by one of Cedars-Sinai's finest scholars, the great Dr. Michael Benedered. Michael, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Dr. Clapper. I really appreciate it.
Did you listen to any of the sound bites of Jonas Salk?
I did. I loved it. He's one of my heroes as well, and it's so great to just hear about him like that. I mean, you can read about him, but it's going back and hearing that Edward R. Murrow interview. It's just amazing.
Yes, to do it, to be so selfless, to be creative enough, Michael, an artist, if you will, to say, no, I'm not going to do it with a live virus. And to some extent, this latest vaccine, which you'll teach us about, goes even the next level further. It doesn't even involve the virus. It uses mRNA. So I'd like to give you a clapper vision. Tell me if this is something that makes sense to you to explain the vaccine. If the virus is a burglar, you can keep the burglar out of your house by buying a pit bull. The problem with the pit bull is it can bite the burglar, but it also can bite you. That's making a vaccine to keep the burglar out with a live virus. So instead, you can take a pit bull that has died and stuff it and get a tape recorder to make barking sounds so you can have a fake pit bull that's stuffed with the sounds and the burglar can potentially be fooled. But making the vaccine from mRNA is as though you went to the arts and crafts store and bought the pattern, bought the scissors, and created your own stuffed pit bull. Does that make sense to keep the burglar away?
It's an interesting analogy, but I like it.
So, Michael, before we get started, teach us a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? What did your dad do for a living, your mom do for a living? And what is it that struck you about being a doctor and particularly going into the field you've gone into?
Well, thanks. So I grew up in a small town outside of San Diego called Ramona. My mother is a veterinarian. I owned a small veterinary clinic. And my dad is a teacher. I was always interested in science and always really was very interested in infections and transmission of disease. I went to medical school at Temple University in Philadelphia, came back to California, did my residency in internal medicine at All of You Medical Center, County Hospital in North Los Angeles, affiliated with UCLA, where just has an amazing infectious disease program. And was also home to Los Angeles' tuberculosis unit, which is a very interesting environment where you're staying really exposed to patients with infectious diseases that we don't often think about, things like tuberculosis, and others. Did my fellowship in infectious diseases here at the joint UCLA CEDARS program, which is just an amazing program. We worked at hospitals throughout Los Angeles, including the County Hospital, All of You, CEDARS, UCLA, the VA, just had great mentorship and really became interested in population health and, really seeing infections as the ecology of disease. And so looking at populations, you can't have an infection without a population. And so that got me interested in infection control. And I was really lucky enough to get my first job out of fellowship here at CEDARS, working with Dr. Draco Murthy and Dr. Grime. Dr. Jonathan Bryan here at CEDARS, one of the original great infection control programs at a hospital. So it's been a really great experience. And of course, for the past 12 months, COVID-19 has essentially become my whole life.
Teach us a little bit about what is so different about COVID from other viruses, or is it not really that different?
It's a good question because it's both similar and different. Prior to COVID-19, we were aware of several coronaviruses that caused pretty severe illness. You know, there was the SARS epidemic as well as MERS out of Saudi Arabia. These were similar coronaviruses that caused a similar pattern of disease with some differences that we knew about and we kind of had on our radar in terms of pandemic potential for a long time. COVID-19, when we first heard about it, we didn't know kind of what kind of virus it was going to wind up being, what kind of disease. I think the things that make it very similar to other viruses is it's a respiratory virus, similar to other coronaviruses, not all that different from common cold viruses. I think in terms of its method of transmission via respiratory droplets with potential aerosolization, in terms of its pattern of infection, where you have this pre-symptomatic period followed by a period of symptoms and then gradual improvements or worsening, depending on the host. And it's and risk factors for severity. I think what makes it really different is a couple things. So the level of severity of disease is much worse for COVID-19. We know it's not as bad as something like MERS or SARS, which can have a mortality rate up to 30%, but it's much more severe than the common cold viruses. I think what also makes this virus so different from its coronavirus cousins is that you have this pre-symptomatic period. So before you develop symptoms, you are infectious, and in fact, you have some of your most infectiousness. You're most contagious for that 48 hours before developing symptoms, which has appeared to be responsible for much of the spread and much of its pandemic potential.
That's fascinating.
So I think that, it's really a perfect virus to spread in a pandemic. Its mortality rate is high enough to be overwhelming for hospitals and public health systems, but still low enough where it can transmit easily throughout the population without killing everyone it has. And its asymptomatic spread is really insidious.
Michael, can you hang on? I need to talk to you about what this vaccine, and just to teach us a little bit about a live virus, the Sabin vaccine, the polio vaccine that Salk did, and this whole new idea of making it completely synthetic. Can you hang on? So I'll pay some bills and we'll come back and continue with
Absolutely.
You. Is that okay? Okay.
Yeah,
all right, Warriors, we're listening to the great Dr. Michael Benaderet from Cedars about COVID-19. He's an expert in it, and he's going to teach us a little bit about the excitement for this vaccine that's coming down the pike that we'll all be able to hopefully someday get and be able to avoid the ravages of COVID-19. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Holy emoji, clap man. Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Holy slip disc.
That's right, Robin. Hear listeners talk about their aches and pains.
Holy hamstrings.
Along with Doc's clapper vision.
Breathe deeply.
And advice to callers.
On your toes, Robin.
So like, follow, and enjoy.
A wise decision.
The Weekend Warrior Facebook page.
Frankly, I can think of nothing more stimulating.
What do you want when you gotta eat something? And it's gotta be sweet, and it's gotta be a lot, and you gotta have it now. What do you want?
Lip, smack, and whip, back and patty, whack, and ink, and knack, and gilga, rack, and scowl, rack, and clack, and jack, and boo.
Big clap.
Candy coated popcorn, peanuts, and a prize. That's what you get in.
Big clap.
Hey, what's up? It's LZ. Look, you know there's no better way to start your Saturday than with Dr. Clapper and the Weekend Warrior Show. 7 to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
It's the most entertaining thing in the world.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I'm schwitzing like a piece of tuna fish.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN. 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Such a treat to be able to talk to one of the bright minds, and Cedars-Sinai has a lot of them, the great Dr. Michael Benaderet. Michael, teach us what a vaccine is. How do you go about making one, live versus dead versus this synthetic type that Pfizer's coming out with us? Take us through the basics of a vaccine.
Well, I think, kind of, most basic idea, a vaccine is a piece of is basically a foreign piece of material that activates our immune system to target whatever that piece of foreign material is, and that can be a lot of different things. So we have vaccines to a lot of different illnesses. We have vaccines to viruses. We have vaccines to bacteria. And vaccines can work in pretty different ways. I mean, the immune system is probably one of the most complicated aspects of human health, and it's still not fully understood. Going back all the way to the smallpox vaccine, vaccines are based on the idea of immunity, right? If you've been infected with something, generally speaking, your body has some ability to recognize what you were infected with, and then has some degree of protection. And that degree of protection can range from complete protection to reinfection. For example, you don't get chickenpox twice. versus partial immunity, right? So you maybe you'll get infected again, but you'll be you'll have a less severe illness, or your illness will be shorter. We see that with other diseases as well. And you know, some of the original vaccination work that a long time ago was done on smallpox, and people realized that if you got infected with a virus very, very similar to smallpox, it gave you a degree of immunity to smallpox. And that's what led to using the cowpox vaccine to develop the smallpox vaccine, which eventually eliminated smallpox. And that's that kind of basic using a live vaccine. And we still have, live attenuated viruses that we use for vaccines, where we give someone an actual live virus that's been damaged in some way to make it less potent, and it will stimulate your body to be immune without without hurting you, right? And so that'll protect you from future infection. But a good example of that is the shingles vaccine that was recently approved, so shingles.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, there was the development of inactivated vaccines, so vaccines that just contained what we call antigens, so pieces of the virus or pieces of the bacteria that can stimulate the immune system to protect you from those agents. And that's, that was a big advance, and that's what we were talking about with Jonas Salk, which is essentially using just one piece of that organism. And it's a great advance because, unlike with a live attenuated vaccine, there's no chance of that particle or killed vaccine causing any infection or causing any spread. And those are very common. So, for example, the seasonal flu vaccine is an example of that. The pneumonia vaccine, many of the vaccines we give. And there's, I think that's probably the most common example of a vaccine. And then more recently, and actually I think very, very recently, we've started seeing the development of these new mRNA vaccines, which the Pfizer COVID vaccine, as well as the Moderna COVID vaccine, those are examples of this new category of mRNA-based vaccines.
Tell us, teach us, Michael, and thank you for that. How does, in your mind, this new type of vaccine, the Pfizer, the Moderna, the COVID vaccine using mRNA, how does it work that's different than the past?
It's a really, really cool technology. So this was a technology that was developed back in the early 90s and has really mainly been used in sort of research studying until now. Essentially the way it works is mRNA is the blueprint for a protein, right? And so the way viruses work is that they use their nucleic acid, their DNA or RNA, to inject into your cells and then create their own proteins using your cellular machinery. So what the mRNA vaccine does is it takes just a piece of that virus's genome and replicates it into this messenger RNA, this blueprint for a protein, and uses that to create basically mock virus proteins, which then stimulate your immunity to those virus proteins. One of the cool things about the coronavirus is on the surface, it's covered in these spikes, these spike proteins. That's what they call it, coronavirus, because the spike proteins make it look like a crown.
Mm-hmm.
And those are a great target for a vaccine because they sit on the outside of the cell. So what Pfizer and Moderna and these scientists did is they took the genetic blueprint for this virus and they found the gene that makes the spike protein. So now you have this, you have the blueprints for making the spike protein, and they've encapsulated it into a small fatty capsule, and they're able to inject that into the body. And what your cells will do is they will take in that blueprint and create spike protein without creating a virus, without any infectious potential. And those spike proteins will then stimulate the immune system to develop antibodies to the spike proteins, which will then be protective. It's a new technique because one of the issues with it, and one of the reasons why it hasn't been used previously for vaccines, is that mRNA is a very, very fragile molecule. In our body, mRNA does not last very long. mRNA is created from DNA when we need to create protein, and it's immediately degraded. And our bodies are full of enzymes that love to degrade mRNA. And so the problem is actually getting that mRNA into the cell. And that's been one of the big issues with developing these viruses, or excuse me, developing these vaccines outside of the research setting, and one of the reasons why they have such a high cost. And so the way that they've gotten around this is they've created this this fatty envelope, we call it a lipid envelope, that surrounds the mRNA and protects it until it can get into the cells. And that's one of the reasons why the virus, is, as you probably heard, has to be held, excuse me, the vaccine has to be held at such low temperatures and requires these really advanced freezers.
Do you think the rate limiting factor will be getting enough freezers? Because the temperature you're asking it to be stored in is so low, not everybody has a freezer that can go there.
Exactly. I mean, so far that has been one of the limiting steps. So, you know, there's a huge public health push right now to get this vaccine out. But the storage of the vaccine is a tricky logistical issue. First, you have to have the freezers, which not everybody has. Luckily, you know, many hospitals do have these. And then in addition to that, while you're giving the vaccine, actually taking the vaccine out of the, taking it out of the vial and injecting it, that all has to be done in a certain period of time to keep that vaccine active. So it's every step of the way is a logistical challenge.
So here's a stupid question, and I'm allowed to ask it because I'm just a carpenter in the body. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. Does this mean, Michael, that when you give me my COVID vaccine, that it's actually going to feel cold?
Ah, that's a great question. I don't know if I know the answer to that. I mean, it will be cold. It should still be cold.
Wow. And well, could it be?
I have to put that on the FAQ. I didn't even think about that.
That's, I can only ask this because I'm an orthopedic surgeon. So it's interesting. So it may also be that we have to be on the lookout where they talk about people having allergic reactions. It could be any number of the things that are involved, including the fatty, you know, Ziploc bag around the mRNA may actually be an allergen to people, and not even the mRNA itself. It could actually be the vehicle you put the vaccine in.
It's certainly possible. Yeah. And you know, there are some preliminary, you know, I mean, extremely preliminary reports coming from the UK of some allergic reactions. So we have to be cautious about that. I would say, if anything, the envelope would probably be more likely to cause a reaction than the mRNA itself in terms of an allergic reaction rather than a reaction to the virus. But I will say that at least in the studies so far, it seems like that's been pretty uncommon. So I was just reading some of the data that Pfizer provided to the FDA for the EUA yesterday, and allergic reactions in their study of about, it was about 30,000 people were extremely uncommon. So I'm pretty hopeful.
Yeah, great. You know, do you know where the word vaccine comes from?
You know, I don't actually.
So it's vache, which is in French, the word for cow. And it's because Jenner, in the late 1700s, made the observation, as only a country doctor could, that the women called milkmaids, whose job it was on the farm to milk the cows, but the cows that got cowpox on their udders when they were milking the cows would break and basically sensitize the milkmaid to cowpox. And he made the observation, Jenner, that the milkmaids never got smallpox. And that's where the whole idea of sensitizing you to a virus like smallpox using cowpox would be the solution, because they were touching those cracked blisters on the cow's udders. And vaccine comes from the word in French, cow.
That's
amazing. Isn't that pretty cool?
Amazing.
Listen, I mean, Michael, thank God we have people like you at the forefront. And it's really, it makes me so proud to work at Cedars, knowing the Cedars is just a building, but knowing who the people are inside the building is what's so exciting. For 31 years, I've been on staff at Cedars, and just knowing people like you are there really makes us all very proud and happy. Thanks so much for getting up early to be with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dr. Clapper. It's my pleasure. Take care.
Okay. All right. Have a great day. God bless you. All right, Warriors, the number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Weekend Warriors on Facebook.
Didn't you get the memo?
Quickly here, Clapper's crazy kitchen stories. Easily find different callers' aches and pain issues.
All right, I get it.
Search Weekend Warrior in the search bar and click on Doc's picture.
Who are you again?
Voila! Like, follow, and enjoy the Weekend Warrior Facebook page. What's the best medicine? Besides chicken soup, vitamin C, green tea, prunes, shot whiskey. Not around here. What's the best medicine?
I cannot wait.
We call it Clafter.
You kidding? I'm not a kid anymore. I'm getting old now.
Yeah.
I know I'm getting old. I'm at the age now, if I hear someone goes both ways, I figure it's number one and number two, you know.
Clafter.
Hey, it's John Ireland. You know there is no better way to start your Saturday than with the man who replaced Michael Thompson's hip, Dr. Clapper and the Weekend Warrior Show, 7 to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
Magandan umaga.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Cells are just tiny people.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's Jennifer Lopez singing about medicine. And a great shout out and thanks to the great Dr. Michael Benaderet for educating us all. We're in good hands with people like him taking care of us. All right, the lines are lit up. Sorry I took so long to talk to Dr. Benaderet, but it was worth it to learn about the vaccine. Let's go to Tim in Inglewood. You're on with Dr. Clapper. Thanks so much.
Hey, Dr. Clapper. Great show. Enjoy your show every Saturday.
I appreciate that. How young are you? What do you do for a living, Tim?
I'm 54, and I do maintenance work for the school board.
So does that mean you can fix anything?
Not anything, Dr. Clapper. Something.
I am so, being a Jewish guy, I'm extremely jealous of you, Tim, that you could walk into someone's house and know every outlet, every toilet, every light bulb, every ceiling. You can fix whatever's broken. It's fantastic.
Sounds good.
I'm so jealous. Where did you grow up? What'd your father do for a living?
Grew up here in Los Angeles, and my father worked for the county like for 40 years and then retired.
Really? And what high school did you go to?
To L.A. Jordan High School.
Wow. Did you play sports?
Yeah, played football at L.A. Jordan and at Southwest Junior College.
And did you love your high school football coach, or do we hate this guy?
Oh, I love him. He's actually my adopted godfather.
Really? What's his name?
Coach Washington.
Wow. Is he still alive?
Yeah. I talk to him maybe once, twice a week.
All right. That's fantastic. I told you, when I interviewed the great Tony Gonzalez, 17 years in the NFL, the Hall of Famer, I asked him, when you run down the field as a Kansas City Chief, whose voice do you hear in your head? Your college coach, the pro coach? He said, no, Dr. Clapper, I hear my high school coach.
Exactly.
And, right? The guy who taught you how to do it the very first time. And let me tell you, 31 years, 15,000 surgeries I've done. Every time I open up someone's knee, you know whose voice I hear? The man who taught me for the very first time how to do knee surgery. I hear his voice every time I do it. Thousands of cases later. It's really interesting.
Exactly.
How can I help you? What's up?
Yeah, I'm doing some work around the house, and I started having this thumb pain. So basically, I went to the doctor, and they diagnosed it as trigger finger. Mm-hmm. So I've been going to therapy for the last maybe 4 months. So this thing hasn't been getting any better.
Yeah, it's not going to get any better with therapy. That's a complete waste of your time. So I'm going to get you better. And basically, you want a clap revision? You know what clap revision is, right?
Yes, sir.
So if you now palms up, look at your hand, look at your thumb, and bend your thumb and straighten your thumb, it's no different. Here's the clap revision. Then looking at a fishing rod where you have the rod itself made of fiberglass, you have those loops on the fishing rod, and then you have the fishing line that goes up the fishing, the loops that are right, keeping the line as close as possible to the fishing rod so that you have a mechanical advantage of the stiff rod to catch the fish and schlep the fish out of the ocean, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your tendon, which you're looking at right now, that flexor tendon is the fishing line. The bone is the fishing rod. But instead of the loops that are on the fishing rod, the loops that keep the line close to the fishing rod, they're called pulleys. And they're basically horizontal, thick ligaments that keep the fishing line, the tendon, close to the bone. If there's any swelling in the fishing line or the tendon or any mm-hmm. swelling within the loop or the pulley, the ligament, then it gets stuck. And that's basically what a trigger finger is. It gets stuck because of the swelling in the line or in the loop itself. So you can mm-hmm. go to physical therapy till the cows come home. It ain't going to make a difference. This is what's going to happen. I hate cortisone shots. But if mm-hmm. ever there was a reason, not two or three, but to do one would be to get the swelling down. And you can do this in the office. It's very simple and very elegant. But the only person I'm allowing to touch you, Tim, is a hand surgeon, not mm-hmm. someone who does hips and shoulders and spines and knees. No, someone who just does hands. So you'll do me a favor. I'll give you some names, some people at Cedars that you can go to where they can give you a single injection. That should solve the problem. If it doesn't, under local anesthesia, you don't need a big operation. You can numb the area up and just essentially release the swollen spot. You go home the same day, it's a tiny little incision, and you are cured and you never have a trigger finger again. But you should try to avoid the surgery first by doing a single shot. So you need a hand surgeon. Let me give you a couple of names of people at Cedars. Dr. Culber, K-U-L-B-E-R, or there's a guy we had as a guest on our show, Dr. Tsai, T-S-A-I. Those are two names. You'll call at Cedars. They'll be able to take care of you and get you better.
Dr. Clapper, appreciate it.
And I've helped you, Tim. You're a total stranger to me. Do me a favor. You'll thank me. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me. And God bless you, Tim. Here's Volare. See you guys next week. Volare. Oh, God.